Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome. It's Tuesday. You're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Joining me today, Cindy Parmeter. She's got three books out that really grabbed my attention and was kind enough to agree to join us today. We'll have her back for one of her books on a True Crime Tuesday. So we'll just tease you with that a little bit. But we've got a couple of great paranormal books that we're going to be chatting about. Cindy Parmeter started out as a screenwriter before deciding to pursue her dream of becoming an author. Her first work of fiction, Three Haunted Tales, is a collection of short horror stories. Her second novel, Fox Holler, relates the plight of a close-knit family who find themselves pitted against murderous home invaders. Always fascinated by true ghost stories and other tales of the supernatural, Cindy decided to change directions, thankfully, and focus her writing in the genre of nonfiction. Her family history is steeped in folklore, so stories are plentiful, which resulted in the True Stories of the Paranormal series. The author's works have been featured numerous times on the web series Weird Darkness. Her latest offering, Evil Walks Among Us Serial Killers, is what we're going to feature on a future episode of True Crime Tuesday. We're going to talk about a couple of the books that she has out right now, True Stories of the Paranormal, the complete collection, and we've also got True Scares and Real Life Nightmare. Cindy Parmeter, thank you for joining us.
And thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
So you've had a life kind of already steeped in the paranormal. You've had this throughout your entire existence, or was this something that your family started to let you in on later in life?
No, I remember it from being a little girl. One of my aunts, who has since passed away, it was her favorite thing. She would tell stories all the time, but they weren't made-up stories. They were family stories. She was a super religious lady. But she had a strong belief in supernatural and ghosts. And she had lived in a haunted apartment in Hinton, West Virginia, a really small town. And she would tell stories about leaning over the sink, shampooing her hair, and she could feel someone behind her. And she would throw the shampoo bottle behind her to try to hit whoever was there and turn around, and there was no one. She would be taking a bath and have the bathroom door open, and the door would slam. And just constantly something there, and she could smell people, somebody was cooking in the kitchen, and she was the only one there. She would go in the kitchen, there was nobody there, but she could still smell food, and it was just constant creepiness. And she was always telling these stories, and my mom would say, "Stop telling her these things, she's gonna have nightmares." And I loved it. I was like, "No, tell me more and my mom would make her stop. But every time, she lived 200 miles from us at the time, and every time we visited, I was like, tell me some stories, and I loved it, and I remembered all those stories, but I waited 30 years to start writing about them, but it was just so fascinating to me that was all around. And my grandmother, she would tell stories too. Oh, I remember that time that it was 3 o'clock in the morning, and she lived in a house out in the middle of nowhere, but she could hear someone walking on the front porch. And when she went out, there was nobody there. And she would hear someone in her kitchen, and there was nobody there. And it was just all these stories of the gate opening that led to her front yard, when she would be sitting on the front porch and she would see it open and then close again, like someone opened it, walked through, and shut it behind them. And to her, it was like, well, that's just something that happens.
Was there any ideas at the time of what may have been causing it? Did they believe it was former owners? Did they believe that it was, you know, family relations, people that had lived there and passed on?
That was the funny thing about them. It was so normal to them that I never, ever heard them say, oh, yeah, well, you know, uncle, whatever, he died, maybe that. Never. It was just, somebody walked through the gate. We couldn't see them, but, that's an everyday thing. Somebody was cooking something in the kitchen. There wasn't anybody there. That happens. And they didn't question it. It was just, it's just another thing that happens in life. You can't explain it. You just move on. And they weren't scared. My aunt was scared in her apartment, and her husband ended up moving. They had an incident one night. He didn't believe it. Nothing ever happened when he was there. And they were in bed. Door was locked. And they heard this just sonic boom from the living room. They both ran in. The door was open. It had opened so hard that it had knocked a hole in the wall. There was nobody anywhere. Nowhere. No one was in the apartment. No one was outside of the apartment. It had just happened. And they moved. That was what finally they were like, this is not normal. This doesn't happen. And they moved out of the apartment. And my cousin.
Let me ask real quickly. When you're having this, I mean, did they feel threatened at all? Any of your family members through all of these type of stories? Or has it always been just kind of attention grabbing ghosts, loud spirits, but nothing necessarily malevolent?
The only one that I know of that I think had evil intent, and that was my cousin Larry. He has since passed away. He died very young. But he seemed to be followed by something evil, and he would say it. He talked about it all the time. He even moved from West Virginia to North Carolina to get away from it, and it followed him there. And he pushed him down the steps at one point. And he said, you know, it wasn't my imagination. I hadn't been drinking. I was carrying a box. And the next thing I knew, I was on the landing. And I had felt the hands push me. And there was no one behind me. And it would turn on the burners on his stove and blow out the light so that the gas would fill. And this happened time and time again. He was like, whatever it is, it really wants to hurt me. It's not a game. It's not fun. And even at my aunt's apartment, who was also his aunt, he stayed over a few times, and he said one night he was sleeping on the couch, and he woke up, and he could see figures sitting in a chair across from him, and there were two people. One was on the arm of the chair, one was sitting in the chair, and they were talking to each other and pointing to him. And he said he was so terrified, and he wanted to get up, but he didn't, and he knew they weren't supposed to be there, and then they were gone. But he could hear them talking, and he could tell whatever it was wasn't good. And he lived with my grandmother right before he passed away, and he told her, you know, they come to my window at night. I can hear them. They ask me to come outside, come outside. And she's like, don't ever move. Just stay in bed. Don't listen to it. Go to sleep. And he died in his sleep one night. He was, I believe, 40. So it was just, he was always frightened by it, but he was the only one.
Wow, that's kind of chilling that the one that was being harassed the most died. Was it suddenly? Was it expected? Had he had health issues? How did that go?
It was a heart attack, and he did smoke, and he had had a drinking problem in the past, but he drank because he was just terrorized his whole life. I never remember him not being scared, and he talked about it all the time. He worked at the Greenbrier Hotel, huge. And he would say, they're there. They're everywhere I go. Doors open, doors close. I hear people whispering. There's nobody there. It constantly just, I think, built up in him. And I think that led to whatever happened. And who knows what happened to him that night. Maybe it was legitimate. He just fell asleep and all the blood pressure or whatever took over and that was it. Or maybe he was literally frightened to death, because I know he spent his whole life being frightened.
Has there ever been any visitations from him since his death that any family members knew or recorded?
No, and that's a strange thing, because I've never heard, I know I never had any sense of him ever being around. My aunt never spoke about him. He was closest with my grandmother. She never had an inkling that he was present at all. So very strange, because I would have expected him to try to make some sort of contact, but not that anyone was ever aware of.
Well, you heard all of these family stories, Cindy. Did you ever have your own personal encounters?
We sure did. My first one that I remember was as a little girl at my grandmother's house, and that's when the one that she lived out in the country where the gate would open. I was sleeping in the bed with my parents. And, I mean, this was a house in the middle of nowhere. So when the sun went down, it was black. There's no street lights, no anything. So it was scary anyway. But I had never had really terrifying nightmares or anything. But this one night, I just woke up screaming. And my mom still talks about it because she's like, you were so terrified. And I was saying, they're after me, they're after me. And all I remembered, and I told her then, I could see lights everywhere, all around the room, and they were inside my head, and they were outside of my body, and I was just petrified, and I couldn't sleep after that, and I hated going to my grandmother's house, because I never forgot it, and it only happened once there, but it was just the most terrifying experience that there was all this activity going on around me, and it wasn't a human form, I didn't see somebody, but there was something there that just terrified me.
Now, your grandmother, a lot of this seems to be tied around her,
mm-hmm.
right? In her home, around her, people in that kind of environment. And she seemed to know, hey, you hear the voices, don't answer. Did she ever weigh in? Did she have any idea on what these things might be that, you know, were haunting your cousin or haunting your family?
She never, literally in her words, she would always just say it's the old devil. That was her answer to everything. She was extremely religious, very strong in her faith, and she would just say, it's just the old devil trying to get to you. And it was that simple to her. She didn't need any more explanation than that. It was just this evil presence, and you just ignore it, don't give it any power, and it won't bother you. And I don't think that was actually the case with my cousin. But she never seemed frightened by it, and it did seem to revolve around her quite a bit. And she passed away a couple of days before her 100th birthday.
Wow.
And she was, I remember her ever since I can remember all kinds of activity, kind of whirled around her, but it never bothered her. It didn't faze her even after my cousin died. It was just like, stuff was coming to his window. He was scared, but, you know, what are you going to do with the old devil? And that was always her answer for it.
Did she have, you know, we hear about these people that are born with the veil over their face and things like that. Was there any legend or lore regarding Grandma and why she had these abilities to be so sensitive to everything?
Never heard anything about it. No one ever spoke of it. I know that she spoke in tongues, and she did that quite often, and it was the strangest thing because we would all be gathered around her kitchen, huge family, everyone talking, and she would just, like that, she would just snap into this trance, and she would speak in tongues, and it would go on and on and on, and she would close her eyes, and she would look up at the sky, and it would just go on, and nobody knew what she was talking about, and then, like that, she would snap out of it, and it was like it never happened. She'd go back to making her bread or whatever she was doing, and she never talked about that either. But it happened so many times, and when you're a little kid, it's like, what's the matter with her? And my brother and I would laugh, what's she doing? And everyone would say, shh. You know, she's channeling, she's in a trance, whatever, just be quiet. And she never talked about it. And I don't know what she was saying or who she was talking to or what was channeling through her. It was a religious experience for her, but it was kind of weird and scary for us. But it was common, and nobody said, oh, it's so weird that she does that. I'm like, no, it's just something that Grandma does. And nobody talked about it.
How was she as she grew older about the concept of death? Was she open to that? Was she frightened by it? And did she get, I mean, at that age, was she having visitations leading up to her death that you're aware of?
She didn't, and she never spoke about that. And up until she was 99, still had all of her facilities. She was sharp as a tack, never talked about it, but her sister, who had died a few years earlier, and she was probably in her 90s as well, but she did have visitations. And she's on her deathbed. My mom said she went to visit her, and she said, get them out of here, get them out of here. And my mom's like, who? What are you talking about? And she said there were little, she called them demons too, up and down her bedpost. They were climbing up and coming back down and climbing up and coming back down. And she was absolutely petrified. And my mom was like, there's nothing here. You're fine. You're just delirious. And she's like, I see them. They're here all the time. And she was so scared. And my mom said she had kind of been not the nicest lady. And I think it was kind of catching up with her, and she was at the end of her days and knew it. And she felt that she was being terrorized by these demons. And it was very real to her.
God, and she died.
Yeah, and my mom said, you know, you could tell by looking at her face, this was no joke. She was terrified, and she clearly saw them. But my mom said, you know, I didn't see anything, I didn't hear anything. But, I mean, she would just, her eyes wide, and she would point, they're here, and she couldn't believe no one. She told other people also, get them out of here, and nobody else could see them. But I think if she wasn't seeing them, she had a pretty decent imagination, because she scared everyone by the way she was acting, but they didn't actually see anything.
Now, did the paranormal stick strictly with the ghostly realm with your family, or were you surrounded by many different, you know, poltergeist activity, UFO, cryptid, anything along those lines?
The poltergeist activity, that was at my house. When my husband and I first got married, we rented a house, and it seemed great. We moved in, and everything was fine, didn't have any problem at all. 2 years later, my daughter was born, and it was shortly after that, we just had weird things happen. It started in her room. When she was old enough to talk, she never could sleep in her room by herself. She cried all night long. It got to the point where I slept in the floor beside her crib. It was the only way she could get any sleep. When she was old enough to speak, she said there were two men in her room. And she said they would stand by the window, and one of them would shake her crib at night. And that was until I started sleeping there, and she remembered it vividly. She would describe it, and it would shake, and she was so scared, and that's why she would cry, and we thought, But I had the same experience in her room that I had at my grandma's house with the lights and the activity and stuff, and that went on night after night, and it finally stopped. But it was so creepy, and I hated her bedroom also. And we had two cats at the time, and neither one of them would ever set foot in that room. Not one time. They would go everywhere else in that house, everywhere they weren't supposed to be, but they would not walk into that room. And then the rest of the house, we had an incident. We were in the living room, and we heard smashing in the kitchen. We went in. My toaster oven, which had been sitting on the counter, was in the floor. Pieces everywhere. It hadn't slid off. It had been thrown off. And my husband and I were both like, what the heck? The same thing happened to our tea kettle a few weeks later, and it didn't just fall off. It was smashed to smithereens.
So your ghosts and obviously hate modern amenities.
And our kitchen, yeah.
Not toaster ovens, not teapots. That's funny.
What? It was the weirdest thing, and our light bulbs would blow out, and literally shards of glass would fly everywhere. And we actually had an electrician come to our house, and he was like, your system is sound. Couldn't find anything wrong with the wiring, no reason for it. It would happen time and time again. Our VCR would break. Our television would go on the blink. Our electronic stuff, always something going on. And our final straw, and this went on for probably 3 or 4 years, and we put up with it because nobody got hurt. And we had an attack of bats in our house, which who does that happen to? And we had a floor furnace at the time. And this was our final straw. My daughter was in bed sleeping. My husband was upstairs. I was downstairs. And boom, the floor furnace fell in. And my husband comes running downstairs. It sounded like the house had fallen. It had fallen through into the basement. And we were so naive. It was a gas furnace that we were like, oh, what do we do? I don't know. Should I call 911? And I called and I explained it. And the operator, the 911 operator was like, oh, well, we'll send someone when we get around to it. Just don't touch anything. We were so silly. And I called back a little bit later and I was like, oh, my husband turned off the pilot light. It's fine. Forget it. And they were like, well, they're on their way. Literally 5 minutes later, our street was cordoned off. There were fire trucks everywhere. Firemen rushed in our house. Get out. Everybody out, out, out. I was like, I have to get my cats. Forget your cats. Get out of here. We didn't realize, of course, it was attached to a gas line. And the firemen rushed downstairs, and this was the miracle of all miracles. The people who had lived there before us had built a blower underneath, and the furnace had actually landed on that blower, and it had kept that cord from severing the line that went to the gas. So the fireman was like, he shook my husband's hand, and he said, "You are the luckiest man I've ever met because you had more chance of winning the lottery than you did surviving tonight." He's like, that gas line should have severed.
Holy cow, so really?
We were in the street, and our neighborhood, all the neighbors were out in the street. What's going on here? They actually, he said, worst case scenario, this house should have exploded. Best case, it should at least be burning to the ground right now. And we were like, what? And he was like, you guys are fine. You can go back in the house. You don't have a furnace, but it's fine. But he was like, I've never seen this. This doesn't happen. And we took that whoever had been trying to get us out of the house, they were ramping up their efforts. They were tired of smashing our tea kettle. They were tired of scaring our cats. They were tired of scaring the little girl. And, okay, now if we make your floor furnace smash into the basement, but we don't make the house explode, will you get out? And we were like, yeah, we're leaving. We bought a house. We got out of there. After we moved, we found out that the lady that lived in the house before us, her father and her husband had both died in the bedroom that was my daughter's bedroom. So we put all the pieces together then that those two men just wanted us to get out of the house. And we did, and we never looked back. And I don't know who lives there now, but it was very scary at the time. The deal with the furnace was it woke us up and we got out of there.
Yeah, I would guess so. That sounds like something that would be absolutely terrifying. And, boy, I'm glad you were able to survive it, and you're here to share your stories with us today.
Well, thank you very much.
Cindy Parmeter is our guest today on the Best in Paranormal Talk Radio. True Scares and Real Life Nightmares, that came out on November 7th. True Stories of the Paranormal, the complete collection, came out earlier this year on July 2nd. And we're talking about some of her own personal encounters. When you kind of look back at the life that you've had with all of the paranormal aspects, has it ever been you out seeking it, or does it always just seem to come find you and your family?
Normally, I think it's just found us. I did do a little seeking. I actually went out with my little recorder because I found out that we live close to Parkersburg, West Virginia, and there was a huge fire. A girl had burned down her family home back in the late 60s. She killed her whole family except for her brother. She had nailed the windows closed so no one could get out of the house because her dad didn't want her to date her cousin. And she killed, I believe it was 8 or 9 family members.
Wow.
The site that the house had sat on, they had built, I don't know if I can say the name, a chain store was built there. And I had heard that the store was haunted, especially the toy department, because so many children had died in that fire. And I was so curious. So I took my recorder in there, and I did go looking. And I didn't get anything because the Muzak drowned out any hope of getting any sound there. That was one time I actually went looking for something I didn't find. But I did talk to an employee who said, it is true. We will arrange the toys. Everything will be perfect before we close the store. And we come in the next morning and stuff's in the floor and it's moved over here and it's moved over there. And sometimes we hear giggling back there and we hear giggling back in the stock room and we hear a lady singing sometimes. And I was like, so I did get a little information there, but I didn't feel anything firsthand.
All right. So with the books, tell me a little bit about what exactly do you cover? Are these strictly your family stories, or do you collect stories from others around the world that have, you know, interesting tales to share?
It started out with my first book. It was all family because I had so many stories to tell. And then once people read that first one, I started getting messages from people saying, well, I have a story. This happened to someone I know or to me or whatever. And so I started using other people's stories, and the more I used, the more started coming in. And it was really tough because I would get so many and I would have to weed through because they were all interesting to me, but I was like, well, I can't use all of them. And I would find ones that just spoke to me and I thought people could relate to. And it ended up being 6 volumes of True Stories of the Paranormal. Then I just put them all together for the collection because I thought it would be easier for people to buy one book than 6. And, but now I get most of my stories just strangers will approach me, usually through social media, and offer their stories, and I find them fascinating, so I'm thrilled to use them. And I actually have another book, A Chilling Tale Before You Sleep, and most of those stories are also have been sent to me from sources far and wide. And then I also kind of, I'm interested in urban legends and things, and so some of the stories are kind of explorations of common urban legends that, you know, I wonder, there has to be some basis in fact for everything. And so I kind of do a lot of research to find out where did this come from, and I kind of include those now in some of my books.
Well, we'll cover a lot today while we're together on the show, but what are some of your favorite urban legends that you've looked at, and what kind of factual information were you able to uncover about these stories?
Some of my favorites, I mean, I love the not-so-scary ones. I love the alligators in the sewers of New York, which actually did have some basis in fact. And things like that always fascinate me. Spring Hill Jack, who terrorized England back at the turn of the century. And everything kind of has a little bit of basis in fact. Bloody Mary. But at the end of the day, there are very few of them when I went back through that I was like, you know, yeah, I can see this was totally real. Usually they are kind of just made up. The black-eyed children that show up around Halloween, and it happened around here. We had a big hoax because a lady claimed that a black-eyed child had stopped her car claiming to need help and then tried to jump in the back seat. And I heard that story, and I was like, can that be real? And I looked that up, and I was like, well, not really. But there was a case in England where a lady had taken pictures of her family on an outing out in the park. She had all of her children lined up, and she took the photographs. And when she had them developed later, a little girl appeared in the pictures. Hollow black eyes, long dark hair, white dress. That little girl hadn't been there when she took those pictures. So it was like, everything has, well, maybe, you know, maybe something like that was what sparked the black-eyed children thing. The Phantom Hitchhiker has always been a favorite of mine, where the girl is picked up and she wants to ride up to her home, and when she gets there, she disappears, and the guy goes to the door and says, I dropped a girl off here, what happened? And the lady says, well, that was my daughter. She died on this road 20 years ago, and she's always trying to find her way back home. I never could find any basis in fact for that, but I always thought those were fascinating stories. Urban legends are tricky. I didn't find a whole lot of them that I really felt were real scary clowns, and I just tied some of them back to real people. John Wayne Gacy, of course, was a very scary clown, and I think, well, you know, I kind of told his story because, and, you know, who could be scarier than a real-life monster? And Tommy Lynn Sells, I kind of tied him in with the boogeyman, another urban legend that may or may not exist. It depends on what you consider a boogeyman, but this was someone who crept into people's houses at night and did horrible things worse than any supernatural being could ever do.
Yeah, so we've actually covered him in our true crime category a few times. That guy is just absolutely creepy, what he was able to do and get away with. Terrifying.
A real-life boogeyman, for sure.
All right, let's dabble back into the world of the paranormal then, and some of the, because you've got, what did you say, 6 volumes of stories of your family stories alone?
No, the 6 volumes of True Stories of the Paranormal, the first one was pretty much all family, and then the 5 that followed were a mixture, because stuff still kind of once in a while something will happen. We had one of our dogs passed away 3 years ago, and then not too long after she died, my husband was standing in the kitchen, and we have other dogs, but they were all in the living room with me, curled up sleeping, and he was in the kitchen fixing a snack, and he came in and he said, which dog was in there with me? I was like, well, none of them. They're all here with me. And he's like, no, there was a dog in the kitchen. It rubbed up against me, and I could hear its toenails on the floor. I'm like, well, it wasn't our dog. So you're like, we started thinking, is our dog visiting us? And then every now and again, for a while after she died, and it eventually stopped, but we could hear her toenails clicking through the hall because she always had overgrown toenails. And all of our other dogs are accounted for, but we'll hear a dog. And it's like, well, that's midnight. She came back to give us a little visit. And over a period of time, that stopped. And we always kind of felt that midnight was hanging around for a little bit just let us know she was okay.
Was that one of your only animal encounters with spirits? That's something I know a lot of our listeners are absolutely fascinated by. The idea that, you know, our furry friends might stay with us after they pass.
We have had a lot of experiences with animals. My sister had one that was, she saved a baby squirrel, and she raised it. She had the squirrel for 7 years, and she just absolutely adored it. And he passed away, and she buried him in the backyard. And while she was in the process of burying him, she found a red leaf. And it wasn't the time of year where you would find something like that. There were no trees that bore any red leaves. But she picked it up because it was perfect. And she was just heartbroken because her squirrel died. And she had a job where you travel quite a bit to people's homes working. And this one particular time, she went to her job. She was feeling especially down. She came out from her job, and laying right there where there was nothing else, a completely bare street, there was a perfect red leaf. And it was identical to the one that she had found where she buried the squirrel. And to her, it was, she took it home to put it with the other one. I mean, they were perfect matches in two completely different places where they shouldn't have been. And she took that as a sign that, okay, settle down, stop grieving. Everything comes around and it's okay. And she felt that she had, that had been a present to her from her dead squirrel. And we've had issues, things like this have happened with our cats. I had a cat that passed away when I was in my 20s. And for a while after she died, I would find her toys. Toys that, I mean, this cat had been gone for a little while, and I thought everything had been taken and put away, and I would find a cat toy on the floor. It was weird, okay. And then again, I would find a cat toy laying on the couch. It's like, well, this wasn't here. I would feel her jump on the bed at night, which she had done hundreds of times during her life. And then after a while, again, it kind of stopped, but I felt that I was still getting some visits there. But we've had a lot of things that had to do with animals, and I've had a lot of other people bring me their stories of their dogs who have passed away, and then, you know, they'll hear the dog drinking water, and when they have no dog and no water sitting out, but they can hear the dog lapping water in the kitchen, and then they'll run in there because they're so excited and their dog's not there. But it's like, you know, it's not wishful thinking. They really hear it, and it's like an energy that just is so strong that it just can't leave. It's still there for you for a while. And I think our animals know that we kind of need that kind of adjustment time, and they sort of try to stay with us a little bit to see us through that. And I've had a lot of animal stories.
Yeah, I'm always fascinated by that, to, you know, to have experiences, you know, and I get them all the time, which I think is really cool when you hear people that, you know, you're very close to your pet. My parents had a black lab named Walker that they loved to death, and she eventually passed, but they would swear that they would still feel that dog jump up on the bed, and she was a heavy breather, so the bed would always kind of shake, and they'd be laying there, and all of a sudden they'd feel the thump on the bed, and then the that kind of vibration of the bed as it was going up and down from the dog panting. And that happened for quite a while. I always find it interesting, too, when people will be in a location and have cats and they've just moved in, but they'll have a ghost cat darting around that isn't one of theirs. And I often think, well, that's not totally unbelievable to me. I had a place up, and I've told the story a long time ago, but I'll reiterate it. We were at Thayer's Bed and Breakfast up in Annandale, Minnesota, and we were doing this kind of intuitive weekend event that they were holding up there. And they had asked me to come along and witness it for myself because I was a skeptical believer, and I wanted to see what they were going to do. And they walked us through these different exercises, and people were having really profound paranormal ghostly encounters in this hotel, which has since closed. And I think it's reopened under a different name now, but new ownership, and I don't think they play up the paranormal angle. But at one point, we were all laying in this giant room, kind of laying on our back, arms spread, kind of trying to just sensory deprivation, not touch anything, not do anything. We'd close our eyes, and they were doing this kind of rhythmic drumming music and walking us through kind of a guided meditation to connect with our spirit guides or totems or whatever. And I'm laying there, and one of the cats, they had two big Angora house cats, and I'm not a cat guy. I've never been a cat guy. now I've got three cats, so something's wrong with me. But I had they had these three big Angora house cats that would roam around, and they kept shooing them out of the room. Well, I'm laying there, and all of a sudden I start feeling the bump and nuzzle up against my leg and my arm. And, you know, I'd kind of push them away, and they'd leave me alone for a few seconds, and then I'd start feeling the thump of the cat kind of grinding up against my arm or my hand to get attention. So after a while, I just could not connect with my spirit guide. And I'm just like, whatever. So my eyes are still closed, and I just start petting this cat. And it's one of those super furry, fuzzy cats. And I'm getting in deep, and I can feel it purring, and I can hear it, and it's rubbing up against my hand and arm. And at one point, I finally open my eyes to take a peek at it and see which one it is, and my hand is stroking open air. There's nothing there. And I snap my hand back, and I was like, what the hell was that? And it wasn't until a few weeks later, one of the other girls that was laying close to me and kind of at an angle, she contacted me after the event. She goes, I have to ask you a question. When we were there, were you being bothered by cats at all? And I said, yeah, I kind of was, but I kept pushing them away. She goes, yeah, I was too. She goes, did you ever bother to open your eyes? I said, well, what do you mean? She goes, Dave, I think we were playing ping pong with a ghost cat. She goes, I would be petting it for a little bit, and then I kind of shoo it away. And she goes, at one point, I looked over, and your hand was rubbing the air. And she goes, and it was shortly after I had shooed away the cat that I had been scratching. She goes, and then I realized there were no cats in the room with us. So that was kind of my holy cow moment when it came to animal ghosts. And just that aspect of it all fascinates me. We have to take a break. We've got more. We'll continue with some more true scares and real-life nightmares when we return. Cindy Parmeter, our guest here on Beyond the Darkness.
Beyond the Darkness.
We're back. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. If you like these kind of stories, true scares and real life nightmares and true stories of the paranormal, you can find both books along with her serial killer book on our Amazon page. And it's real easy to do that. Just go to darknessradio.com, click on our killer deals link. And we do try to put up links to all of the different books that we talk about on the show, DVDs, documentaries, movies, anything we can think of, we put it right there on the site for you. So go check that out, darknessradio.com. Click on our killer deals link to find all of the cool books that we feature right there. Cindy Parmeter, our guest. And I was talking just before the break about one of my more interesting and fun paranormal encounters with a ghost cat. And you said off air that reminded you of a ghost story. So why don't you take us back into this strange realm, Cindy, and what's the ghost cat story you have to share?
Well, back in the day, I worked selling real estate, and one of the ladies I worked with told a story. She knew another realtor who had taken a lady to show a house. They had gone in. Everything was great. It was the perfect house for this. This was a single woman. It had everything she wanted, her dream house. The realtor had a phone call, so she stayed downstairs, and she told the lady, you know, go upstairs, explore. The lady went upstairs. She looked around, loved the house, and there was a cat up there, a white cat. It rubbed against the lady. It was sweet as can be, and it was perfect, and she thought, well, this is the realtor's cat. Someone left a cat here. I don't know. She didn't care. And as they walked, she went through the rooms. The cat followed her, and when they reached one point, the cat just started hissing. Everything changed, and the lady, the client, got sick to her stomach. She ran downstairs. She told the realtor, I'm going to be sick. I can't stay up there. She told her about the cat. The realtor was like, well, there's not supposed to be a cat here. She went upstairs, couldn't find a cat. The lady that had wanted the house ran out. She wouldn't stay in. She completely changed her mind. She told the realtor, I'll have to get back to you. She ended up telling her, you know, I have to keep looking. I don't want that house. You know, it gave me a bad feeling. I actually got sick there. I don't know what, but it's wrong. So that was fine. She ended up buying another house, no problem. Some time went by, and she got a call from a realtor. And she was like, have you been reading the newspaper? No. What is it? The house you looked at, did you read about the couple who were murdered? And the lady had no idea what she was talking about. The couple who did buy that house were murdered in the house by home intruders. And
no way.
The lady who dodged the bullet was like, if it hadn't been for that cat, I would have bought that house. She was like, nothing bothered me about it until the cat showed up. And when the cat started reacting, I immediately got sick. And there had been no cat. Nobody could find a cat. She was the only person who ever saw it there. And then she had sort of survivor's guilt. You know, why did the cat save me and did not save these people who were killed completely at random? They just happened to be home. And it could have just as easily been her. And she credited the cat with saving her life. And the realtor told that story to every other realtor who in turn told that story, and then we kept telling the story. But it freaked everyone out, because I think cats do kind of have a connection with the spirit world that mm-hmm. more so than any other animal, I think. And it creeped me out at the time, and I actually had it in one of my books because it was just one of the creepiest things I ever heard. But she did credit the cat with saving her.
Did you have many experiences as a realtor going into a house and finding out just how creepy it was, or finding out after the fact that there was a murder?
No, I never, to my knowledge, sold a tainted property, but I did have one instance where I was with another realtor, actually, just kind of accompanying her, walking through a house, and every single thing about that house I knew. Walking in, I'd never been in it in my life that I knew of, but something, I knew every room, where it was going to lead to, how it was going to be set up. I knew everything about that house, and it freaked me out so much. And I didn't take that listing, and I didn't show that house because it bothered me so much, because I've never walked into a house before and known every inch of it the way I did that house. And it was just the strangest feeling, and it was a beautiful home. Perfect. It would have been a buyer's dream, but I couldn't stand it because I never had that happen, and I've never had it happen since. But I knew that house. I just don't know how. But that was my only really weird experience in a house. Other than that, I can't remember ever having any sort of gut feeling about a house one way or the other.
If you found out that there was a murder in the house, I'm just curious, in your area, are you supposed to disclose that?
Yes.
And what about somebody coming to you and saying, hey, Cindy, I want you to list my house. By the way, we think it's haunted. We don't know why. There were no murders here. Nobody died here. But we hear footsteps in the attic. We hear, you know, walking up the steps in the basement. Doors will open and shut. Lights go on and off. Are you supposed to disclose that as well?
That's a gray area. You're supposed to. Legally, I don't know if it's the same as, you know, if you know that someone has been murdered, you have to say that. If someone says my house is haunted, so many people don't believe in that sort of thing. As a realtor, I would have told people, you know, they say the house is haunted. Some people don't care, but I don't know if you're legally obligated to disclose that. But that reminds me, my sister has a pet sitting business. And she has encountered that more times than you can imagine. In this area, it's an old, kind of an old city, and she's had clients who will tell her, you know, we need for you to come and stay for a week, you can stay all night, but we have to warn you, there's something living in the house. We don't know what it is, we don't know who it is, but you'll hear doors slam, you'll hear footsteps in the hallway, the dog will react. Just ignore it. You know, we've lived with it for years, and my sister will be, thanks, but no thanks. You know, I can't do it. She has a fear of bringing things home with her. She's like, I don't want to pick up your entity and bring it to my house. But some people live in harmony with their ghost, but she's had that happen several times. She had one job she did not take because the dog was so terrorized by whatever was in the house that at one point it actually tore the screen door off of the kitchen trying to get out of the house. The lady wanted to move, but she couldn't sell the house because she had more in it than she could ever get out of it. So she was just biding her time, but she flat out told my sister, you know, I know there's something here. Her boyfriend had died in the house under very strange circumstances, but it wasn't him that was haunting the house. But she said, you know, something's here. It terrorizes this dog 24 hours a day. The dog can't sleep, can't eat, can't do anything. But I don't know what to do. And again, my sister didn't take the job because she did, if something was that evil in the house, she didn't want to be in there and risk taking it home. Because you never know what's going to attach to you. But this poor dog is being terrorized in the meantime, and I don't know whatever became of it. Because when she told me the story, she was like, it obviously it's something. I mean, this dog is petrified, but the lady is kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. And unfortunately, her dog suffers for it.
You know, I was curious about that whole thing. I know dogs and animals are supposed to be very sensitive towards different aspects of the paranormal. But, you know, I also wonder, you know, how much of it is when a dog stops and starts looking, is it really looking up the stairs at something, or is it tipping its head to hear something that's taking place three blocks away because their hearing is that good? Or is it catching the scent from two doors down where they're making ribs? You know, something that we're not picking up with our human senses, but the dog is picking up with their normal senses. With that said, we had a really interesting visit with Marianne Winkowski, the real-life ghost whisperer on our show back in, I think it was 2006 or 2007, and she was doing some readings for people. And she asked this guy, she can actually see into people's homes almost like it's closed-circuit TV if there's a ghost there. If there's not, she cannot see your home. But if there is, she gets this kind of open connection, like a video link, into your home. And she, at one point, she goes, you have a little dog. And she goes, yeah, we do. And she goes, and that dog will suddenly jump up and yelp like it's been kicked or poked or punched. And they're like, yeah, that happens all the time. She goes, I can see you've got, I can't tell if it's like a lawnmower or a snowblower in your garage that you bought at an estate sale or garage sale. Does this make sense? And they're like, yeah, we just bought this, this last summer. She goes, yeah, it's an old man's ghost that's attached to that tool, and it absolutely hates your dog. So once in a while, it just comes by and gives it a kick.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, you're kidding me. And she was nailing it on the head. We were so skeptical of the ghost whisperer, and she was just call after call, just knocking them down like that. As a matter of fact, I think she's got a new book out. We'll be hoping to visit with her soon, too. But that to me, was just really astounding, that there's that kind of activity that can be tracked, and that animals are that impacted by a spiritual presence. I mean, it's sad as hell to me to think that as a ghost, I may be somehow attached to my snowblower or lawnmower.
Right. That's really fascinating, because some of this particular dog, the lady said, it seems like someone pokes the dog. Every time the dog tries to sleep, poke, poke, and the dog will jump up. It's really strange. Maybe she has a possessed object that she's not aware of.
Right, yeah, and that's fascinating. Do you have many stories where you talk about possessed or haunted possessions as well?
I do, yeah. And we actually had a haunted possession. It was the strangest thing. My husband's grandmother loved to go to estate sales, loved to go to flea markets, and she gave us a doll that she had, I don't know where she got it, obviously used somewhere. And it talked, and we thought, oh, it was really kind of interesting, and it just kind of was a normal doll. It was probably 3 feet tall, and it would say normal things. Oh, I like to eat peas and carrots and just things like that. And, well, oh, it's cute. But then after we had it for a while, it was the weirdest, creepiest doll you've ever seen in your life. It went from, I like peas and carrots, to one day I was outside on the porch swing with the stupid doll, and the doll said, you need professional help. And what? And my husband was so fascinated. He's like, make it say it again. No, it would run through its repertoire. I like peas and carrots. I want to be your friend. Nothing about you need professional help. It only ever said it one time. And then the doll started speaking with a German accent. And it was like the trials at Nuremberg. It would go through this whole big, long spiel about Nazis and trials and paperwork and documents, and you don't have the proper documentation, all with a really heavy German accent, on and on and on. And then it would stop, and it would never do it again. It was the creepiest doll, and I couldn't throw it away, though. There was something about it. I was like, no, and it had a name. Its name was Little Alice. I put little Alice in the storage shed because I didn't want it in the regular house. And finally, I just couldn't stand to see it anymore, and I threw little Alice away. And it was 6 months later, so we were cleaning out the shed, and I found little Alice's hair. And how I had thrown her away and not realized her hair had gotten left behind, but there was like this doll wig that had been her blonde curls just laying there amongst the junk in our shed. But little Alice was the creepiest doll, and I don't know where the German accent and the crazy Nazi talk and trials and, I mean, it was like she was reading court documents, and it would just go on and on and on. That was the creepiest thing that we've ever possessed. And we have another thing that my husband got at an antique store, and we named her Gretchen.
What did you say? Where did the doll end up? It just vanished one day?
It ended up in the trash. I actually ended up trashing her because her batteries, it wasn't like Chucky where we took the batteries out and she still talked. I just never took the batteries out. But she stayed in the shed for ages. And still, if you opened the shed door and touched anything, she would start talking. And you never knew what she was going to say. It could be the sweetest little thing, I want to be your friend, or it could be the craziest off-the-wall stuff that no doll has ever been programmed to say, ever. And then she would only ever say it one time. And I was like, no, this doll is wrong. I don't know what it is or who it is, but this is not a normal doll. And I finally got the guts to throw her away. In the beginning, for some reason, I just couldn't throw her away. And I wanted to, but I was like, no, we'll just put her away somewhere we can't see her. But we always knew she was there. If you went to get the hoe out of the shed, if you touched anything, she would talk. So I just trashed her.
Oh, you're breaking my heart, Cindy. I need that damn doll. That's astounding.
It was, and when I think about it now, we thought, if you had met little Alice, you wouldn't want her. She was awful. She was really just horrible. And, we had to get rid of her. But at the time, we just thought it was funny. It was like, why? Why is she talking like that? No doll does this. But it's just weird. When you have something like that, you think, well, you have Annabelle here. We need to do something with it. Take it to someone who knows what to do with this thing.
Right.
But we just threw it away. But it was bizarre. And I don't know where she came from. I don't know where Grandma Audrey found her. But she was something like I've never seen before. We've had plenty of dolls. And I've known a lot of people who had dolls. And some people have had some weird instances, but nothing like this talking doll that spoke German and did trial transcripts.
And her name was what?
Little Alice. And that was her given name. She actually had a little thing that came with her that said her name was Little Alice. So we did know that. And I tried to look her up on the internet to find out, is there a Little Alice doll? I couldn't find anything about it. But, yeah, she was special.
You think so? Holy mackerel. All right. Now, you said you had a couple of more stories regarding kind of haunted possessions as well?
Yeah. My husband loves to go to antique stores, and he got this big portrait, and it's an actual person, very androgynous, and we named her Gretchen. And honestly, I'm not 100% sure that it is a female because the features are so... just guess, very guessy, and so are the clothes, everything's weird about it. But we brought this portrait thing into our house, and I told my husband right off the bat, I don't like its eyes, I don't like it, I don't want it here, oh, you're being silly. Everything started going wrong in our lives once we brought that portrait here. My husband lost his karaoke jobs. He had like six. He was the most popular karaoke DJ in this area, one job after another, gone. My mother-in-law passed away. Just my van had four flat tires at different times, one and just random. Everything was going wrong, and I'm like, it's this thing. Get it out of the house. It's bad luck. And we actually ended up getting rid of it, and we sold it to some guy just for a couple of dollars to get it out of the house. And my husband even told him, you know, there's something wrong with this thing. He didn't care. But our luck improved once it was out of the house. I was like, it was just this awful thing that sometimes you just see something and you get a bad feeling in your gut it's no good. And that's what that portrait was.
Yeah, but thankfully the girls still say, yes, I'll go out with you, Dave. So it worked out for me in the long run. we've got a lot more to cover, a lot more stories. She's got so many books. We've got links to those books. Remember, just go to darknessradio.com and click on the Killer Deals link, and you'll find all of the books and great items that we have hand-selected for you right there. Cindy Parmeter, you're giving me the chills. I'm glad to have you join us today. That doll story, I'm sure I'm going to get a ton of emails on. Everybody's going to want to find out where they can get little Alice. Let's and boy, talking about a jinxed, jinxed item. Did you feel guilty getting rid of it though, knowing that it was kind of cursed? Did you ever think about just like, if you're going to get rid of it for just a few bucks, just take it out in a field and burn it, kind of thing?
It's one of those things that when I think now, I mean, my husband sold that portrait to that guy. I mean, he knew. My husband said it's bad luck for us, and the guy didn't care, but. Little Alice, I never would have given her to anyone because I knew there was something wrong with her. So just throwing her in the trash, I mean, who knows where she ended up, laying in a dump somewhere, probably talking right now. But as far as the portrait, as long as the guy who bought it knew, I didn't really think about it. So hopefully, maybe it was good luck for him, but it just was bad luck for us. And I bought a clock for my mother. And this is just one of the other possessed object things. So strange. My mother, very religious lady, doesn't really believe in spirits and ghosts and stuff. My aunts and my grandma were a little more into that than my mom. So she doesn't talk about it, and that's fine. But I bought her a very normal chiming clock. I got it. It wasn't expensive, but she loved it because it chimed. And she didn't have it very long, and she told my sister, you know, something's wrong with this clock. It talks. And my sister's like, what does it say? Just random crazy stuff. My mom said it would wake her up during the night and say, you're not pretty. You're not pretty. Put your boots on. Just silly things. But it was coming from the clock. She doesn't have a television in her room, nothing like that. She's not crazy.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh. There's that old saying that you're so ugly your face could stop a clock, and the clock is going, you're not pretty, you're not, look pretty. At me. I've stopped moving because you're so hideous.
Coincidentally, yes, she wasn't pretty. But the best part about it is my mom is so practical. My sister's like, well, get rid of the clock. I love that clock. And I was like, it was fine with her. And she even said, she would put her pillow over her ears until the clock would shut up. I was like, oh my gosh, Mom, just get rid of the clock. I love that clock. I'm not getting rid of that clock. It didn't bother her that it yelled at her that she wasn't pretty and to put her boots on. And this was not every night. And then she would say, well, it says other stuff too, but I don't want to tell you what it says because then you'll get upset. So she never would say, and she still has this clock, but it stopped talking. But she would never say what the bad things were that it said. But
doesn't that alarm you that Mom didn't want to get rid of something that she knew was saying unkind and horrible things?
I know. This is the strange thing about my mother's side of the family. They are so hard to rattle. It's the craziest thing. Why would you lay there night after night and have your clock yell at you?
Hey! Hey! Ugly! Hey, wake up! You're snoring! I can't sleep! How's a clock supposed to keep time when all I hear is you're snoring? God, you're ugly! That would be the best clock on planet. And it's got to be, I would hope that it's in like Gilbert Gottfried's voice, because that would be even...
Yeah, she never described it. I don't know if it was a female voice, male voice, or what, but it didn't bother her. It's like, oh, I cover my head with my pillow, and I just want it to stop. I try to get back to sleep, but I'm not getting rid of that clock. Don't even suggest such a thing. I was like, okay, Mom, keep your clock. Yeah. But, yeah, it's crazy, but some people are really hard to rattle. I mean, I literally think a ghost could walk through the room, and she would just get out of the way of the television. I mean, she really just doesn't care about that sort of thing.
Hey! Ugly, make me a cheese sandwich. Are you ever going to dust me? I can barely see you in your ugly face. That's funny. What a weird, weird deal. that may be one of my favorite stories. Where did she get this clock from?
I actually bought it for her. It was a Christmas gift. And I bought it, I mean, it was cheap. I literally paid like $15 for it.
You know why now?
Exactly.
Oh, I thought the last woman was ugly. This one, this one could stop time. Do me a favor. Put me in the garage sale. This place is horrible.
The best part is when it chimes, it plays beautiful songs like Close to You, and then when it's not chiming, it just yells insults. So, yeah, 5 o'clock.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's crazy. That is absolutely crazy. I love that. That's now my favorite story. I need a clock that yells at me like that. That's who'd ever need to get married again? You got a clock telling you what to do, right? All right. What are some of your other favorite? Do you have any really funny, ghosty stories? Anything that just really kind of struck you aside from, hey, ugly, get up? Do you have any other good ones that just kind of tickled you? Maybe you didn't even include it in your book, but just something you thought was kind of a funny ghost story?
Right off the top of my head, I can't really think. People usually bring me the stuff that really frightens them, and except for my mom's crazy clock and our German-speaking doll, I really can't think of anything that I thought was funny. People like their scary stories, so that's kind of what they bring me. I mean, I love funny. I think ghosts can be funny, too. I think they can do silly things. I can tell you, this would embarrass my husband, but of course I will say when we had our poltergeist, my daughter and I were away, and he had the house to himself, so he decided to indulge in some cinema that's probably not family-friendly, let's just put it that way. And he got himself settled in to watch this not family-friendly cinema in the living room, and he heard a huge crash in the dining room, and we had all this stuff stacked up against the wall, and every single thing had collapsed, just smashed everywhere, and he thought that was the ghost way of telling him, we don't watch that kind of stuff in this house. So it interrupted his night, and it scared him enough that he went upstairs and went to bed and forgot about whatever activity he was planning that night.
Let's say, since we don't really have many on the fun side or silly, give me some of the absolute creepiest from any one of the books that you've done, a couple of your favorites as we're wrapping up this evening on the show. What are some of the all-out scariest tales you've got for us?
One of mine was with my cousin Larry again. He and some buddies. He was a cemetery hunter. He loved to go to cemeteries. He loved to grave walk, is what he called it, back in the day. And they would go at night when they weren't supposed to be there. And he had a buddy who said, I know about this cemetery. People say it's haunted. And my cousin was like, yes. I mean, he was the one terrorized by spirits and at the same time would put himself in that position of being around spirits. And it was him, three other buddies, and they drove to the cemetery. They had, everything went wrong as soon as they got there. The gates were locked, and it was all a disaster. They decided to leave, and as they started the car and tried to leave, something held the car. It would not move. They could not get it to budge. It was like the wheels were spinning, and nothing was happening. They finally got out of there, drove home, and there were handprints on the back of the car. And he saw it, his buddy saw it, something had actually been holding strong enough, and he swore it was true, holding the car back, and that's why they couldn't move that night. They didn't see anything, they knew the car wasn't moving, and there were handprints, and they also had handprints on the side where something had touched the passenger side, and they hadn't seen anything, but it had left handprints. And he called his sister out, my cousin, and showed her. And she could clearly see on the trunk of the car where there were handprints. And he swore it was because something at the cemetery had held the car back. And I believed him. He had so many creepy things that happened. He told that story many times. And I believed him because this was someone who was used to having weird stuff happen around him. And I think he got to the point where he just didn't care anymore and he would go looking for trouble, and it always found him.
Yeah, that is the way of the paranormal, isn't it? If you go looking for it, it'll find you. It'll let you know that it's there. And in most cases, it's probably not what you were hoping to have happen.
Oh, I actually have one that's a little bit funny, and this happened to my father-in-law. He was old car collector. He bought this awesome car, and I called it the real life Christine because trouble always with this car. And he loved it, and he would drive it. He could only get big band music on the radio, and this drove him crazy. No matter where he was, he drove all up and down the East Coast. He could only ever tune in big band music. No FM stations, no anything. Always big band. Always problems. He finally got tired of the car, decided to get rid of it. He sold it to some guy. Guy bought the car, and he didn't have it very long. And he called my father-in-law, and he said, do you want the car back? And he's like, why would I want the car back? He's like, well, let me tell you what happened. Had the car out in the yard. I was working on it. Car wasn't running. Had my back turned. Car started all by itself, ran over me. The guy had two broken legs. He spent some time in the hospital. Finally got back. He's like, I don't want this car anymore. This car wasn't running. Started itself and ran over me. So, yeah, it was a weird car that only played big band music, shifted itself into gear when it wasn't running and ran over the new owner. So it was kind of a creepy car.
Kind of.
And my father-in-law took the car back, and then he ended up junking it years later and didn't know what happened to it after that. I don't know if he, I think he actually sold it to someone for parts or something, but yeah, he didn't want it either. But he said it was just one of those cars that, you knew something had happened in it at some point because it was just wrong. And then he'd heard that a little old lady had had it, and she loved big band music, and he associated that's why that was the only thing you could ever get on the radio. So it was just a weird story.
Yeah, to say the least. All right, give me your last two fun stories before we say goodnight tonight, Cindy. And again, we're going to have links up to these books, so you can go find them at darknessradio.com. Click on our Killer Deals link. It'll take you to our Amazon page. Yeah, give me your last two really good ear burners as we leave people. For those going to bed listening to the show tonight, let's leave them with some creepy aspects. What have you got next?
I don't know how creepy it is, but one of my favorites, just because it happened to me, I went to school with a boy. We lived in the same neighborhood. He was one of the neighborhood bullies, and I actually couldn't stand him. But then once we hit a certain age, he lost his dog one day. I helped him find his dog, and we kind of became friendly. Then we got to know each other. It turned out he was actually a really shy, really sweet guy. And anyway, I guess when he was about 15 or 16, his family decided to move to South Carolina. He moved away. We were going to keep in touch. We didn't. I was working at a fast food restaurant when I was 17, and we had a busy day, and I'm working, and I looked up, and I saw him standing in the doorway, and he smiled at me. I knew he saw me, too, and I thought he'd waiting to see me, so that's great. Finished my shift. He wasn't there. I went outside to the parking lot. He's not there. I'm like, well, he knows where I live. I still live with my family, and he knew where the house was. I figured he would come and see me there, and he didn't, and I saw him at the mall. This was on a Friday, so I'm at the mall on Saturday. Was with friends again. Well, the mall's always busy on Saturday, and I saw him walking right towards me. He looked right in my eyes. I was, like, thrilled. Got jostled around, and couldn't find him. Like, lost him again. Okay, that's one of those things. But he knows where I live again. He'll get in touch with me. This was before cell phones, before Internet. Didn't hear from him. So I was like, well, he obviously went back home, and I missed him. Nothing I can do about it. I went to school on Monday. One of my friends came up. The boy's name was Vince, and my friend came up and said, did you hear about Vince? And I was like, yeah, I know he was here. I saw him on Friday. I saw him again on Saturday, but I couldn't get to him. And she was like, what are you talking about? She was like, no, did you know Vince killed himself? And I was like, no, I saw Vince. And she's like, no, my family knows his family in South Carolina. Friday, he took the paddle boat out in the lake next to their house, and he shot himself. And I was like, it can't be. I saw him on Friday, and I saw him again on Saturday. And she's like, no, you could not have seen him. Well, I did see him. He was there. I knew this boy like I know my brother. And I saw him. I saw him 2 days in a row after he had killed himself. And was one of my favorite stories, just because I know that this boy came to me. I hadn't seen him in a couple of years, but he came to me to say, yeah, I did this horrible thing for whatever reasons. We never found out why he did it. But it's okay. I'm okay. And I just wanted to let you know I didn't forget you after all. And I'm all right. Because he was smiling both times I saw him.
That's really kind of a neat story. Creepy, but neat that you got that kind of connection. And what's your last story for us tonight, Cindy?
Oh, I'm trying to think of a good one.
Well, we talked about nightmares. Are there any ties to real-life nightmares coming true, things that people are, you know, things that they think are paranormal going on in their homes that start invading their dreams, or things from their dreams starting to invade their real world?
Well, I actually just finished in actually true scares. I have, there's an Asian sudden death syndrome. Almost exclusively Asian men have this, where their nightmares are so real that they will die in their sleep. Perfectly healthy men in their 20s and 30s will go to bed fine, and their families find them dead the next morning. And they actually have such a strong belief, and they will say, you know, something is stalking me in my dreams. And Wes Craven actually got the idea for Nightmare on Elm Street from this syndrome. Because a boy in California back in the 70s, and actually hundreds of immigrants have died from this in the United States. But he heard the story of this boy who couldn't sleep. He would not sleep. He was like 17 years old, and he told his mom and dad, when I go to sleep, something is in my dream, and it's chasing me, and it wants to hurt me. I cannot sleep. And his parents actually got him sleeping pills. They were like, you need to rest. And it was just like in the movie. He would coffee all the time, trying to stay awake. He never took the sleeping pills. And finally, just exhaustion took over, and he fell asleep, and his parents found him dead the next morning. And he had sworn that something is stalking me. And, I mean, I've read stories of people whose hair actually turns gray overnight who are so terrified by their dreams. And, you know, there's all kinds of excuses to, oh, maybe it's just something genetic or whatever, but they're convinced that there's something there, a night hag or something that just terrorizes them during their sleep. And some Asian men actually who know about this and will dress in women's clothing at night to try to fool this spirit to leave them alone, thinking, because it only happens to men.
That's chilling. Yeah, I remember talking about that around Halloween time, the inspiration for the real Nightmare on Elm Street. And it is creepy that that's taken place. I know in some cases they were able to track it to heart issues, but in some cases they have no clue what was attacking these men.
Yeah, and the fact that it's so widespread, it happens in Japan, and it happens in Korea, it happens in China, it happens in Thailand, and men who have no genetic connection with one another. And it's just a very, and just such a strong belief. And then sometimes they chalk it up to just stress, but they're very young, and a lot of them had told their families, you know, when I sleep, this thing attacks me. And it sort of, I related a little bit to sleep paralysis, but normally sleep paralysis doesn't kill you. So
right.
I kind of, in a way, maybe they just believe in it so strongly that they give it that kind of strength, and it's enough to terrify them to death. Or maybe they know something we don't.
Very well could be. Thank you so much for joining us, Cindy, and sharing some of these tales. If people have their own encounters that they'd like to share with you for your upcoming books, what's the best way to reach you?
Facebook is my author page on Amazon. You can contact me through Facebook. I have a Facebook author page, Cindy Parmeter. I'd love it. So if
Fantastic.
You just want to drop me a note, that'd be great.
Yeah, definitely. We will we'll put up links, and like I said, there's easy ways to find her. And if you follow us on Facebook, we'll be linking her in the post for today's show, so it's very easy to locate our guests. It's just been a pleasure speaking with you, and I can't even begin to tell you how much we've enjoyed hearing these stories and your encounters. And it's great to hear that your family has such strong ties to the paranormal and that they're so open to this, that it led you to put these books together and these stories. And for those of you that love true crime, we have another paranormal themed true crime today. So make sure you go subscribe. If you haven't subscribed already, shame on you. Subscribe now. Remember, on November 22nd, my 50th birthday, I'll be drawing 3 lucky followers, and you may get a 1-year paid subscription to the Best in True Crime Talk Radio. Mary Jane's Ghost, The Legacy of a Murder in Small Town America. Tonight, your chance to be a part of the Best in True Crime Talk Radio by subscribing. Just go to darknessradio.com and click on the True Crime Tuesday banner. Or, if that's too much work, just look at the posting for today's show. You'll see a link on how to subscribe to True Crime Tuesday. It's never been easier. Only $5 a month. You owe it to yourself. Come on, you're going to blow $5 on something stupid this month. This time, put it to something that you're going to get more out of. You're going to get 4 to 5 awesome 90 to 120-minute episodes delivered to you. Go sign up for it. For Tim Dennis, I'm Dave Schrader. You've been listening to the Best in Paranormal Talk Radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.
You ever wonder how far an EV can take you on one charge? Well, most people drive about 40 miles a day, which means you can do all daily stuff no problem. Go to work, grab the kids at school, get the groceries, and still have enough charge to visit your in-laws in the next county. But they don't need to know that. And the best part? You won't have to buy gas at all. The way forward is electric. Explore EVs that fit your life at electricforall.org.
Struggling to see up close? Make it visible with Viz. Viz is a once daily prescription eye drop to treat blurry near vision for up to 10 hours. The most common side effects that may be experienced while using Viz include eye irritation, temporary dim or dark vision, headaches, and eye redness. Talk to an eye doctor to learn if Viz is right for you. Learn more at Viz.com.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase